Hey there, welcome to Reality TV. As always, I'm Jody. I'm still Jody. Barely. I'm hanging on by a thread. It's been a rough morning. I give all the parents out there so much credit because, God, you guys, it's really hard right now. But I'm not going to be one of those assholes complaining about having kids because I chose to have them. But it's been a rough morning. If you have a child that is using IXL math, this thing is such a pain in the ass. It's kind of the modern speak and spell, children of the 70s, 80s. Remember this thing where you do one thing wrong playing in Hangman on speak and spell and it just screams at you? That is not correct. IXL fucking sucks. You get one thing wrong and they make your kid do three more problems before they can move on to do the rest of the 15. It's a nightmare. Probably as much of a nightmare as it is listening to me talk about it. So let's talk about today's episode. I'm going to be breaking down the 3-hour episode of 90 Day Fiancé and the Married at First Sight reunion, which was unbelievably good. I've never seen a reunion as good as this one. Kevin Frazier, God bless ya. Also, I need to bless my newest Patreon subscriber, Luke. Thank you so much. Hopefully you enjoy these stickers I'll be sending out. And those of you who are already Patreon subscribers, I have a big old stack of envelopes that are already packed and labeled. They're ready to go. I just have to bring them to the post office and send them off to you. So you should be getting those very shortly. Please go and support me, support the podcast over at patreon.com/realityvpod. Truly something for everyone. And even those of you at the $1 a month level, I adore you and thank you so much. You help keep everything running over here. So I truly appreciate it. See what other perks are over there. This week, I was going to do a little dive on something, but just as I started recording, I got a little alert that I have a whole bunch of unread messages over on my polygamy.com profile. So I think I'm going to go check that out because the very first one I read, I stopped because I want it to be a purely authentic moment. The first line I read was, "Merry meet." So I think it's going to be a pretty good outcome. I'll see who my newest potential codies are. I'll also be talking about the latest episode of 60 Days In, a recap of the reunion. Oh, God, I already missed that show. And I'm going to give you a very thorough background and update on last week's Patreon. If you are a Patreon member, you heard Amanda and I recapping the latest episodes of Teen Mom OG, and we were talking about Caitlin and Tyler's financial issues with their different types of liens. Well, one of our very own David, he sent me a really awesome message about the difference of the liens and what that means for the Baltieras. So tune into that, and that's over on patreon.com/realityvpod. Very quickly, coming up this week on Total Request Podcast, Ashley Consell-Smith, he recommended a great show, requested a great show, hence the name Total Request Podcast, My Super Sweet 16, Season 1, Ava. And for our bonus episode, we're putting out 4 bonus episodes for free for all of our subscribers through the end of this coronavirus. I mean, if it takes us till Christmas, well, you'll be getting a lot of bonus episodes. But she is having me watch an episode of Barry because she is like all kinds of horny for Bill Hader. And it's the Ron and Lily episode, something like that. So I'll be watching that this week. I get to request the show for her next week. I have an idea, but I am going to kind of crowdsource this one because I was going to give her an episode of The Great British Bake Off, but she's already seen a bunch of the episodes. So I kind of want to give her something she hasn't seen. I'm thinking a Stephen Asante episode from My 600-Pound Life, but I don't know which one because he's been on so many of them. So if you have the perfect episode, Asante episode for her to watch, let me know which one it is. Or if there's another show or movie or documentary that you know that I've watched, that you've watched, that you think she would like, throw it out at me and I'll pass it on to her. So with all that said, all that business out of the way, this was a 3-hour episode. I was not expecting that as I sat down a good 45 minutes into the first hour. Didn't realize I was going to be up until almost midnight taking my notes on it, but it was definitely worth it. I mean, does a show ever really disappoint? Maybe during some of the tell-all reunions, but listen, if they're going to give me 3 hours, I'm going to be rolling in it like a pig in shit. Or Ed and mayonnaise, either one. All right, let's start with Stephanie and Erica, because Stephanie is still being Stephanie, and Erica is still exploring her rebelliousness against the beautiful yet muted Outback color scheme. But back to Little Miss Munchausen and her mistaken persona for being so perfect online. It's really tough for Stephanie, you guys, because everyone thinks she's so perfect all the time. But the jig is up. She's not perfect, you guys. I know. I'm shocked. That's why we don't like you, Steph. That's exactly why we don't like you. You actually think you're perfect. You think we think you're perfect. And you do not feel badly at all that Erica's been duped and hurt this entire time. Stephanie does what a lot of the teen mom couples do. They just want to pretend like nothing happened. They really mess up big time. And instead of acting like a grown adult, a grown 30-year-old baby girl that Stephanie is, they want to have a clean slate. Oh, and don't forget, you got to clean the slate really good because Stephanie has a deadly illness that she can turn on and off like a switch. So make sure it's really, really clean. Okay, Erica. Now, jump ahead to, we got to talk about the Aboriginal guy who is a, Mastakava. That doesn't sound right. I don't know what that was, but he's a master carver. And this poor guy is spending the last precious moments of his life pre-COVID teaching Stephanie how to throw a boomerang. Not that I've ever thrown a boomerang myself, but if I had thrown one or when I throw one, I will not be throwing it at someone's parked RV in their driveway and then just giggling. I didn't mean to do that. She didn't even walk over there to check to see if she dented it, broke a window on it, nothing. I wish that boomerang would have flung around and come back to dent her friggin', I was going to say head, but ego. A damaged ego would probably hurt Stephanie more. And let's talk more about Stephanie. Did you guys know that sharks are on her top 10 fear list? Steph, I'm pretty sure sharks are in at least 95% of people's top fears. You ain't that special, Steph. That's kind of the whole point of cage diving adventures to begin with. There's a whole movie series, Jaws, about sharks. It's just a basic human response to be afraid of sharks. God, I hate her so much. She thinks she is so special and unique, and that seriously is the whole problem with this YouTube generation. I know, I think I've aged about 35 years during the last 3 weeks, but it's all the millennials' fault, I tell ya. But Stephanie, she's really sacrificing on this cage diving adventure. She's doing it for Erica because she would go to the ends of the earth for someone she loves, which is why she walked 3 feet to the end of the boat for Erica. We see you, Steph. Now, Darcy. God. I actually think that's how everyone says Darcy's name. They're never just like Darcy Silva. It's always, Darcy. It just comes out with a sigh. There's actually like a, it's actually D-A-H-H-H-H-R-C-Y, Darcy. All right, well, her first line right out of the gate was about how she's going to take my time to recreate my visions of how I see my future, start my new chapter. It's okay. Right. Well, that should be after Darcy gets properly fitted for a brassiere because she's past the bra stage now. I have been there, especially when I gain weight like I just have this past few weeks. In the first place it goes to is my boobs and they start spilling out of shit and it's uncomfortable and it's not a good look. I look like Darcy's boobs. I'd actually take the rest of her body, but listen, I get it. She needs to upgrade, get fitted for a brassiere, a 5-snapper, no more, no less. Well, maybe more, definitely no less. And then walk yourself to a local bookstore and buy any other book besides Chicken Soup for the Single Souls because her metaphors and wannabe Oprah speak are so overdone. And it's not at all her problem. Darcy always talks about her future. I don't think she needs to be looking at her future at all. Darcy, you gotta look at the now. Look at who you are now, what you have now that you can be happy about. You got 2 healthy kids. You have Stacy, built-in best friend and family. You have a house that's a doppelganger of Bra Molly's. Actually, there you go. You copied her house. Now copy how she straps in her boobs. And she's also got probably some fans and a lot of glass and mirrored home decor items. So just enjoy the moment now, Darcy. Don't start looking for who you need to find to make you happy. Only you can make you happy. That's my Oprah moment for the day. Anyhow, let's talk about Stupid Tom in his booties. They're back. This time he's written a letter. This guy's such a joke. I don't even want to give him the time to talk about it. So I'm going to very briefly go through this because what is there to say? He's a fool. He's trying to pull a Love Actually moment and it failed in the most amazing way, especially when he tops the did you gain weight comment from a couple weeks ago with she'll wake up and be old and single wondering what happened. Okay, Tom, I think if she listens to my advice, Darcy will be thanking her lucky bedazzled Buddha or, definitely like those affliction crosses. She'll just be so happy that she's not waking up to Sir Snaggletooth over there. So thank you, Darcy. Good job. Everyone just give her, I would clap, but it's going to be annoying for you to hear it on this microphone. Round of applause for Darcy, right? For once, she stuck her ground. She stood up for herself. It was very, very badly needed. And special shout out to Stace for throwing away the letter in that hideous House of 11 jacket. Loved the color, hated everything else about it. All right, Yolanda and Williams, not Williams. I mean, she's still just making up the story as she goes along. At what point does your mind say, you know what, Yolanda, you need to show your kids these text messages from Sweet Tits? I think that's what was being blurred out and bleeped out. God, I can never imagine, even when my kids are grown, bringing DMs that were slid to me from someone named Sweet Tits and saying the name over and over again. It's just beyond my prudish nature is popping up here. But Yolanda is not a very good actress. And that's what makes this thing such a letdown. When she's sitting there at the end with her son, when they're doing the true catfish moment with reverse image search, she's like, you need photographs of Williams? Yes, right there in a folder called Williams. Reverse image search? Why, I have never heard of such technology before. Girl, we were rooting for you. We were all rooting for you. Now, Avery and Ash. Okay, I need to center myself here. Get in touch with my feminine energy before I lose my goddamn mind and blow up at everyone within a 10-mile radius of me because this guy really pissed me off last night. So first of all, I think we need to dig a little bit on this guy. I dug into his Instagram and his website, which I will share with you in just a little bit. But I really doubt his first name is Ash. Doesn't that just sound too trendy? Ash, oh God, wait, hold on. What's his last name? Ash Naek. Knack? Naek? N-A-E-C-K. Ashnik? Doesn't that sound like some sort of poisoning? Anyhow, I think it's just a made-up name. Maybe he was inspired by the color that his balls turned because they've just turned black from lack of circulation in those denim freaking tights. Once again, here's Ash's weekly reminder to size up, girl. Now, speaking of sizing up, Avery, my girl, has started to size up Ash's potential to be anything other than a douchey narcissist. I am really liking Avery's saltiness this episode. So as soon as Ash walks into this room where he's supposed to give this seminar, he starts doing that schmoozy thing. Oh, my tubes just tied themselves, cervix permanently closed, sealed like an envelope, I tell ya. And every woman in that place, I'm shifting in my chair, I'm physically uncomfortable just thinking about it. They all felt the same way. You guys know those kind of guys that just, they think women or men find them charming and funny and just such a personality. But in reality, we're all just smiling at him because, well, number one, women are always way too polite. And number two, we're just stifling a cringe laugh to spare your feelings. So here we are at this seminar that, oh, Ash says is great for him because he can touch more people. See, also, more greedy bang for your scammed buck. Oh, also see box brain versus rhombus brain. I know, ladies, a lot of words coming at you. So hold on, hold on. I'll break it down for you. I know it's very difficult with all the thoughts and feelings you have going through your head. These things that you're always thinking of will lead to new thoughts and feelings. And, you know, sometimes, ladies, you want to like read books or learn or talk with other rhombuses. Well, then there's men, and men have several boxes in their brains for things like success, money, career, fishing. It's your job, ladies. Am I talking too fast? Okay. It's your job to hop in that fishing box of his and figure them out, but not, you know, too much, because fishing takes like 5 to 6 hours and, you know, bitches be bitching when they come around too much, if you know what I'm saying. Oh, hold on. One of you have a question out there. Oh, run. Run like a little boy who has just been schooled by all the girls in the fucking school. That was amazing. This is a moment I would love to relive over and over and over again, because those women did not back down. And that one blonde chick was just freaking slaying. Like a, what are those things in Star Wars? The beam sword lightsaber things. That's how I pictured her, just slicing off his dead ashy balls and poking him in those big eye holes, which are the perfect size. She couldn't miss if she tried. And then we have Avery over there, who I don't even think she was so much embarrassed. I think she was pissed. She looked like she was seething. And the second those women left at the end of the seminar, she knows that they were all going to go talk shit about him, maybe about her, because she would have done the exact same thing. And I love Avery. And actually, I love this scene at the boardwalk, minus the super fluffy sweaters, because it was very distracting. But that scene to me was right up there at the top of one of my most favorite scenes ever, because Avery just demolished Ash in the most straightforward, not name-calling, just facts and logic. Maybe she's got one of those square boxes in her brain for logic. Right to his face, and he was incredulous. He could not believe it. You know, after the bomb of all bombed performances, Ash still somehow thinks that the audience was the ones at fault. Like, they just didn't understand it. Maybe with all their thoughts and feelings and ideas and opinions, they just interpreted it the wrong way. They're not evolved enough to understand where Ash is coming from. Right. Bravo to Avery for going where not many women have gone before, nor men on this show, and really just throwing it right back at him. Like, no, you are wrong. You are being ignorant. She was nicer about it than that. But I want to take a moment here to look at Ash's relationship coaching. I almost got tripped up here. I was going to say business, but listen, it is an absolute scam, in my opinion. Now, I saw that he is taking a break from social media because he just can't handle the truth being thrown back in his face from all those crazy female energies coming after him. Maybe he just needs to have some more self-reflection time while he takes those morning shits in the ocean. I took a little shits and giggles trip over to his Instagram page, and I highly suggest you go check it out. It is at the Mind Body Coach, and you're going to love it. It reminds me quite a bit of Dr. Jessica from Married at First Sight, because he has a lot of inspirational quotes, a lot from that Dr. Wayne Dyer. But every once in a while, I was able to find three before I just stopped looking at his page because it was grossing me out. He puts his own little stamp on it as if it's his own quote. So here are some of my favorites. All good relationships are built upon trust. And trust is developed over time. At the Mind Body Coach. Well, that's groundbreaking. You guys never knew this about trust, did you? Thank you, Ash, for telling us that people need to build trust. It's like the first time I've ever used that phrase. It's crazy. Another one is, my soul lit up and was deeply touched by this post. Read on and learn why? At the Mind Body Coach. Yeah, I don't think that's quite how a quote card works, but keep building that box in your brain. This next one, I'm just going to share one more. Just remember this very evolved creature that Ash likes to say he is. Since the start of 2020, 6 women were killed, one a few days ago, a mother of 3 murdered by her ex-partner. Men, grow the fuck up! Learn how to use your heart, your brain, and for fuck's sake, manage your emotions. The reason why we refer to you as a man is because you not a boy anymore, so don't throw tantrums like one and go killing people, period, at the Mind Body Coach. Well, I mean, that's going to be right up in there in the next 2020 quote book. Write that one down. Also, isn't that kind of interesting how Ash himself threw a temper tantrum and just stormed off on his own? Maybe we should start referring to him as the at mind body boy, because he certainly was not acting like a man. Okay, now I want to talk about this guy's website. I pulled it up. It was just a link right from his Instagram, and it's howtogetmrwright.samcart.com. His font is like Arial 22 point, and it says, "Stop the chase. Let me guide you on how to attract a great guy. Living in the now, Ash Neck," whatever the hell his name is. "Updated version of the ebook coming out," all in caps, "on the 2nd of March. Okay, I got to read this to you because it is so good. So just sit back and enjoy this. "Hi, my name is Ash Neck, and as a dating coach, my passion in life is to help women just like you attract the right man in her life. Truth is, life was not always fabulous." And he underlined that strangely. He does a lot of weird, all cap, all bold or underlined moments. "There were times where I experienced challenges that brought me down to my knees. Failed marriage, bankruptcy, house repossession, sleeping in my car because I was broke. True story. And failed business venture. Name it, and I can vouch that I lived it before. That paints you a good picture by now that life was not so forgiving at times. However, the lesson learned at that moment was that the breakdown I experienced gave me the capital C courage to stand up and break through my limiting beliefs. Now, fast forward 10 years later, I share my passion to help others to not only reconnect with themselves, but to also attract a great guy in their life for a meaningful relationship. If you wish to understand dating, relationships, men, and yourself, this mini ebook course is the answer to your struggles." Wow. So he goes on to tell about how he uses a holistic dating coach approach. Not quite sure what that means, but he uses different modalities, which vary from energy point work, healthy habit stacking, communication approach, easy to follow manifestation techniques, and restructuring limiting beliefs to empowering ones. Sure, dating can be hard on a woman's heart, mind, and self-esteem. Many fumble, underlined, through years of mismatches, making the same predictable and preventable mistakes. But rest assured, I, Ash Neck, through my own mistakes, years of studies, experiences, and hands-on work with ambitious single women, is here to guide you and ease your journey to welcoming, underlined, a great guy in your life. Now, this is what he says his background is. Neuro-linguistic programming, neuro-coaching, life coaching, human science, couples therapy, and holistic living. And he uses nutrition and mindfulness techniques to go above and beyond to ensure that we get the best possible experience. Now, here is like a big star highlight section. Think about what he was talking about last night during that workshop. Here, he says, "Relationship is not easy, period." I know there's a whole grammar thing. He's not very good on that. But more importantly, he says, "The game has changed over the past 50 years, and the way our parents or grandparents used to interact with each other will not work in this new day and age. Imagine trying to make Windows 1 work in today's tech environment when what is needed is a Windows XP. Envision the headache you will experience. An upgrade is, in bold letters, imminent." Well, during that seminar, he was saying we should do it like in the olden days. Remember, men go to work, they go hunt, bring home meat. Women stay home because we're nurturing and we want to take care of kids. But on here, he's saying the game has changed and you can't do it that old way. So what the hell is he talking about? Now, then he has a couple little quote cards of people that are supporting him. They've got to be friends because there's no way any of this is legit. But if you want to read his ebook, which I'm certainly not going to do because I'm not going to spend 12 Australian dollars. I don't even know what the conversion rate is there, but I'm not going to put my credit card on this website. And what exactly are we going to see in the book? How long is it? Is there a table of contents? Do we get a little preview? No, not at all. I guess I just have to rely on my rhombus brain, jump around and use my crazy female imagination to figure out what might be in there. Okay. God, that was exhausting even just pretending. All right, David. I am going to propose something. Maybe some of you are publishers. We can team up on something here. I propose a remake, an adult spinoff of the children's book, No, David, except this is the adventure version for desperate and horny men. Like, we just scream, no, David, no, on every page where a guy is going to Western Union or using AOL 2.0, using a CD-ROM to speak with a woman overseas. And then we turn the page and we just go, no, David, no, 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 no. And then after he rings the doorbell to door number 8 and his heart is broken, we say, it's okay, David, I love you. But we would make sure that the illustrations don't actually show the creepy older horny guy hugging us. It would be like over FaceTime. And it would have like little tips on the side of internet safety, catfishing safety. We'll workshop it. Like I said, illustrators, book publishers, let's start working on this together here. All right, but moving on to what actually happened on the episode, which really was not that far off. David rings the doorbell and this guy named Anthony, who lives there, matching sun damage, which is crazy. He's the actual tenant. And he says, I've lived here since 95. I have no idea who that woman is, because if she lived here, I'd probably be hitting her up too. Just kidding. He didn't say that. He seemed like a lovely man. He's seen some things. And by some things, I mean years and years, 25 years of that horrid green paint on the wall. So David's standing there, still questioning the guy, and he's not getting the hint to leave. The man doesn't speak your language. He has nothing to say to you. Move along. But I mean, I guess we shouldn't be surprised because David doesn't get the hint. That's the whole reason he's on the show. He has never gotten the hint for the past 7 years. And this really is one of the moral dilemmas 90 Day Fiancé throws at us every now and then. It doesn't happen often, but when it does, I mean, he's basically begging this mythical Lana to keep dragging him along on this thing. This is probably the hardest Lana, I'm putting Lana in quotes, this is probably the hardest Lana has ever worked, just trying to shake David off. But he keeps coming back. He won't let Lana or Lenny or whoever this person is, he won't let him off the hook. David is addicted. That's really what it is, plain and simple. And he did kind of acknowledge that at the end of the episode, so we should give him a little credit for that. He just cannot stop. He needs to get addicted to something else. I don't know, a Nordic track, maybe Words with Friends. Anyone want to hook up for a game with David? Oh my God. He would be on that thing nonstop, pinging you, nudging you night and day. All right, let's move on to Ed and Rosemary. Well, I just have to say, first and foremost, whenever we see any little kid saying goodbye to their mom or dad on any of these shows, it kills me. The kids are about to cry, the parents are about to cry, and it makes me, well, I mean, I see Ash and then my ovaries tie themselves again, but it just makes me want to have more kids or like foster or adopt or hug all the world's children. But, you know, then we see Ed and I'm like, oh, ugh. Behind every sad 90 Day Fiancé child, there's just a older man waiting to screw their mom. And then I remember, oh, God, Jody, right, you're really not that good of a human. So let's move on to, oh, God, the hotel. I forgot. Shit. I was going to jump right forward to the monkeys. But we cannot forget the toothpaste scene. Now, I was already pissed off about the lingerie because that's a gift for you, Ed. That's not a gift for Rosemary. No woman is like, oh my God, yay, I'm dying to get this from a man I barely know. Then freaking Ed takes out that toothbrush that I think was like a Hello Kitty or maybe a Sparkle and Shine. You couldn't have just gotten a regular Crest toothbrush, even a generic one. So that was very creepy and condescending to begin with. But then he takes out the toothpaste and the mouthwash, and he says that he noticed her breath at the airport was terrible. It was so bad. Really, Ed? Was that before or after Rosemary looked right over your fucking head because you were eclipsed by a trash can? Fuck you, Ed. Couldn't he have done this off camera? Think about this. If he truly loves her and is concerned about her health, he had the entire day and night with Rose by himself, and he had his packed suitcase with him, so he had the toothbrush, he had the toothpaste. So why did he wait until the cameras were there to tell Rose that she's gross? Because basically that's what he's telling her. You gross me out, you need to brush your teeth. And he's doing it in front of us. And you know why he did it in front of us? Because Ed is a coward, plain and simple. He knows that if Rose was in a hotel, she's just had breakfast, she's laying in this comfortable bed, the camera crew's there, Rose is on his turf. Back at her house, she would have lost her shit on him, just like when she was taking him around for that night. That would have been on her turf, and she would have felt way more comfortable telling him off. But now he has her cornered. He's just a sleazy, horny man, and whatever it's going to take to get what he wants, her feelings be damned. I mean, she could have brought up the fact that he has a lot of overgrowth of his nose hairs. That shit is just popping out like a bush every week. Or his sweating issue. As someone who runs hot all the time, trust me, I would be devastated if someone pointed that out. But don't worry, guys, because Rose actually came out on top with this halitosis issue that she has. Actually, I looked up the ulcer thing, and it said that their breath can actually smell like urine. And now I feel really bad for people who have ulcers and bad breath. But listen, did you see any of those monkeys attacking Rose? No. Instead, they chose the Oompa Loompa with the candy bags hanging out of his backpack. I call that winning. And what did Ed think was going to happen on the island of the monkeys? Do you think it was like a zoo? Like Carol Baskin's place? No. He did as much research for this field trip as he does for anything else in his life. That would mean a zilch. Nothing. Nada. So let's fast forward to the most romantic table at the resort, which was next to the pool. I mean, not the beach. Right. I'm guessing maybe the sand isn't soft enough for Ed's neonatal sensitive skin. He needs a certain thread count sand for it to pass inspection. God, he's such an ass. Anyhow, he tells Rose finally that she looks beautiful and the ambiance is perfect, but there's something he needs to get off his chest because it's been really, really bothering him. I mean, more so than your breath, Rose. But you know what? Let's put it that on hold. Let's eat first. Right, Ed. Have you seen Rose? I mean, she obviously doesn't have a problem with willpower. She wants to know now. She doesn't care about the food getting cold in front of her. She wants to know. Me, on the other hand, I'd be like, let me eat my surf and turf and then we can get into it. But TikTok, I mean, we only have T-minus 10 minutes before the salmonella and listeria kicks in. So let's eat and then get into it. But Rose is, God, I wish. That's all I can say is I wish. So Ed tells Rose about her sister asking him for money, and I'm probably a fool, but I believed her, you guys. I don't think she knew, at least directly. Like, maybe this has happened in the past. This is something that people do or her family does, but I don't think Rose knew about it this time. Am I an idiot? I'm an idiot, right? She probably knew. But later, Rose takes a dip in the ocean, probably to wash the Ed off of her, and Ed rings up a friend. He tells the friend that he wants to propose, and then once he does that, he's going to, you know, shatter all of her dreams and control her reproductive life by getting a vasectomy. What else is he going to do, right? What if he loses her? Thank God that voice of reason shot it straight to Ed that he cannot do that. He would be controlling her life. He's got to tell her before she leaves everything. It takes her kid across the world to another country. He just can't do that. He also can't do hammocks. I mean, I don't know why Ed thought that it would be a good idea to even try to sit in a hammock. His body's not made for a hammock, nor is mine. Even for people with an average balance, 75% of those people are going to get dumped out. So why would you even do that, Ed? Just further proof of his terrible judgment. Now, baby girl Lisa, nobody puts baby in the corner. We save her for last. We're saving Dabella DeBall for last. Lisa is truly the worst kind of American. And I know that's a very loaded statement these days, but listen, she is smug, check, entitled, lazy, and completely deaf and ignorant to the social cues around her that are screaming to be followed that the rest of society knows to go along with. For example, you dye your gray hair that's 5 inches long at the roots before you try to convince an entire nation of your sprightly youthfulness, okay? I don't even think she needed to wear a scarf on her head. Usman probably was just doing her a favor. You know, I'm going to do you a solid, cover up that hair, girl. You know, mommy doesn't like it when Mrs. Claus tries to steal her son away. I mean, is Lisa really so dense that she thinks she should have won mommy over already? And we got to stop with the mommy stuff. I know, I'm grossing myself at this point. She did the bare minimum. She got a goat and she said a prayer. That's it. You know, why didn't Lisa bring items from the States just like Angela did? She could have gone to Usman's mom's house to cook a meal with her, try to make conversation instead of barking at Usman for translation. Crack a smile, for Christ's sake. Stand up, show some respect. Very simple things, but no, Lisa can't do it. And I don't know how, I can guess why, but I don't know how Mother Usman was able to say yes. I think she relented only because of the promise to visit every year, and maybe Usman will be able to help his family out financially, but how she was able to watch Lisa cackle with that smoker's lung and act like she was a 19-year-old virgin being allowed to marry. I should probably read whatever good book Mother Usman is reading because she is truly exhibiting saintly behavior. Now, who actually believes Lisa wanted a simple ring? I really want to know because I refuse to believe it. They left this scene in there for a reason, and I think I have the reason why. Lisa has been wearing all sorts of rings with gems and rocks. She's got on bracelets. In one of the scenes right after mommy gave her permission, God, now I'm fucking saying mommy, mom gave permission, she had on big gold hoops with diamonds or CZs in them. So I think Lisa is just BSing Usman in the hopes that he's going to come back with some big diamond ring. She's doing the old bait and switch herself, and I guess Usman is too, but, you know, Lisa was acting like this simple gal that just wants to stand by her man, but then she starts laying on demands real thick once he's in too deep. And like I said, Usman is saying that he wants to be the more dominant one, I think is what he said. But at least he's upfront about it, and it is part of his culture. He doesn't know any different, which is why Lisa barking commands at him and being condescending is so troubling to Usman. And it is absolutely hypocritical of Lisa to say she doesn't want to be treated like an animal when she herself is proud to be an American liberated woman who barks at her husband. In this instance, it has to go both ways. You know, if you yell commands at him, you got to be willing to take it too. All right, after a very quick break, I'll be back with Married at First Sight. All right, let's jump into this season 10 reunion of Married at First Sight. It's been 5 months since decision day, sex, lies, and arrests. You can't make this stuff up. Kevin Frazier, my hat's off to you. He did an extraordinary job with this reunion. He really should be on some other tell-all reunions. 90 Day Fiancé, I'm talking about you. All right, so in this episode, we have all the couples coming back together to give us a little update. And then at the end, they all sit down together. But before we talk about Katie and Derek, you guys, this set was so, so bad. It looked like a Wayfair warehouse sale. You know, you don't need to fill every space with tchotchkes or fake succulents or a weird tree bark cage covering a faux palm tree. Did anyone check this out? If you still have your recorded episode, it is behind the couples. It's on the left side of the stage if you're looking at it. Really bizarre setup there. God, and those teeny tiny couches. What was that? And don't forget the out of this world TV show from the 80s. Remember that with the pyramid where she could freeze time? She talked to her dad that lived on another planet. Anyhow, there were those pyramids from the 80s TV show on one of the three coffee tables. It's got to stop. I suck at decorating and I could do a better job than that. All right, let's get into Katie and Derek. So I'm going to do this kind of like the Real Housewives reunions where I critique each woman's look, and Katie's was a huge mess for me. The dress with the earrings, the hair pulled off her forehead, that was a swing and a miss for me. And it's not a Real Housewives reunion. I should probably rephrase that. I'm judging it as one. But this is a Married at First Sight reunion, Ms. Lohan, Lohan Light. You can take the CZ waterfall earrings off. Let's not be too formal about this. Now, after a quick little catch up, we get flashbacks from the season. We find out that after decision day, Katie was feeling like Derek wasn't trying to win her over. He was just assuming he already had her. Maybe because he did, Katie. He legally had you and you him. That was kind of the point of decision day. He chose you and you chose him. And this right here, talking about another show that I don't watch because of this reason, this is where I think The Bachelor really fucked up a generation of women, primarily Katie's age. They really think that real life and real dating is like what they see on the TV show. The marriage, the proposals, the whole thing. That's not real life, ladies of that age, if you're listening. Real marriage is working and going to school and the day-to-day monotony. I mean, of course, you want to have some spontaneity and lightness and romance in there, but your life is going to look completely different than when you first fall in love. And sorry, those of you falling in love, but that's the truth. I mean, talk to any therapist. They're going to tell you there's stages of falling and being in love. It's not going to be sweeping you off your feet and winning you over every single day. So yeah, Katie, he wasn't trying to win you over because that will forever put Derek in this place of subordination. You know, he's trying to prove something to her all the time. When is it ever her turn? What does she have to give back into this? And that's where, the host, Kevin Frazier, that's where he started to get in there. He tried to get Katie to admit some faults that she might have, or things maybe she could have done differently, or things that she could have done to contribute to their disagreements or their strife, but she shut that shit down quick. Yes, I did contribute. Every time we were physical, I initiated. If we need to have a talk, I led those conversations. If he shut down, which is okay. I mean, it's totally okay if you shut down, but I was the one who led us to breakthroughs. So yeah, I did some things too. Not what he was getting at, Miss Perfect, little Miss Pris. He was saying, did you do things to negatively contribute to the marriage, not all the good things that you did? So, I mean, let's just get to it. Are you still married? Obviously, that's a no. Katie thought that it would be a good idea after 1 month of trying so hard that she was going to take the marriage back to a friendship level. Then she suggested they sleep in separate rooms until they ultimately were able to sublease their apartment and move out. So they're separated. Derek comes back with the perfect response. Yes, he was hurt, but Katie made it fairly easy to not fall in love with her. God, I loved it. And if you saw that little brat's head spin around, she was not expecting that. That took her by surprise, and oh, that stung way more than she let on. We find out this chick not only went back to her ex and slept with him after filming had wrapped, but also the day after they got back from their honeymoon. Katie denies it, but I absolutely believe Derek. And I think Taylor was the one that told him. Well, let's talk about Mika and Michael. We're going to circle back to Katie and Derek when the couples all come back together. But Michael, I mean, looks the same. Oh, I guess I should mention, I mean, Derek looked fine. He was wearing a vest. He looked the same. Michael looks the same. Mika, she looked pretty. The eyeshadow was a little off. The dress was too formal. But she looked good. So after a flashback of their season, we learned that Michael is still trying to convince everyone that he teaches yoga. That headstand tells us that is a lie. And Kevin Frazier, once again, great host. He didn't let Michael get away with just brushing things off with a very vague answer. He was trying to dig at things. You know, he saw Michael for what Michael is, who's actually the perfect counterpart for him, which comes back later when he goes to chase Michael down. All right, so I'm just going to fast forward to Mindy and Zach, because Jessica and Austin, who come out later, it was just boring, no surprises. Mindy and Zach, however, it was great. Zach in his stupid loose tie and glasses looked ridiculous. Mindy is beautiful. I hated the look, to be honest. It was just a miss all around, but I'm not going to spend any time on it because I love her. So immediately Zach is trying to schmooze and pretend like everything is great. He's so happy to be there. And if you noticed during their clip package when Mindy said, oh, he's a super handsome, handsome guy. It's so great. Zach in the corner is beaming, leans into Mindy like, oh my God, isn't this the best? I love this clip. I'm so cute. Aren't I charming? And she doesn't even look back at him, almost disgusted that she ever thought that. And Zach is so blind to these things. It's wild. For someone who claims to be so in touch with themselves, almost like an ash, he really is so out of touch with everything and anything going on around him. Now, the word salad montage, oh, yikes. While the world was watching this cringing and screaming, Zach made it even worse because he's smiling away as if this is his greatest hit CD. He thinks this was like a gift to him. Here are all these amazing analogies and metaphors you made, man. Here's a whole clip package for you. Like, Zach really truly thinks he's more evolved than the rest of us. And the reason that we don't understand him is because we are stupid. Once again, like Ash, no girl, we're laughing at you. And I have to wonder if the reason Zach is an entrepreneur, he's his own boss of this fitness coaching thing, if I remember correctly from the beginning of the season. I wonder if that's because he could never, ever work a corporate job or a sales job. Think about it. He's just so naturally unlikable. I don't think he could ever gain anyone's trust or respect. He's that sales guy, you know, that sales guy that thinks he's closing the deal every time, way overconfident, but really people are rolling their eyes when they see him coming. I'm just repeating what we all know already. I mean, Zach sucks and he's textbook narcissist. All right, Taylor and Brandon. I don't know if I'm the only one that didn't know this, but I had no idea they had protective orders on each other. So we find that out from Kevin, which means only Taylor can be there because not only is Brandon an ass and production probably refused to film with him, but they cannot be on the same stage or within 100 yards from each other. Taylor's story about how the protective orders came to be seemed a little dodgy to me in some ways, and then way too detailed in others. So I'm not completely believing her story that she went to a bar to get free water and then she needed a napkin and she saw Brandon and then she just calmly asked him to leave her alone. No, I picture a drunk Taylor wanting Brandon to see her with her super hot new maybe boyfriend, which is not a mature thing to do. But we also know how Brandon is, right? So I believe Taylor when she says that he started following her and taking pictures. You know he does that kind of shit because we've seen it. He was probably thinking, I'm going to get these pictures and leverage it and retweet it and show everyone that she's cheating on me. Although, like Taylor said, they were already divorced at that point, so why pay her any attention at all? But that's not to let Taylor off the hook because that is her bad for even going there because let's be real. She very likely knew that Brandon was there, and that's why she went. Now we have all the couples come back together. Welcome everyone back to talk about Brandon. And that's what it ends up being. Turns out Mika, Mindy, and Katie were part of the court hearings, and they seemed legitimately stressed out. So whatever happened really freaked them out. I believe Mindy's sincerity when she said she lost sleep over it, that it was crazy. Michael is the only one speaking on Brandon's behalf because they're still friends. And at first, he's just mumbling about it being an unfortunate situation, keeping everything very general. But I have to say, if you are going to take a stand on something, take a side, make it mean something. You know, being a good friend and an honest person, we're talking about Michael here, or he's trying to be honest, it doesn't mean you just automatically, unconditionally back someone up, even to their face. You know, if he's really, truly friends with Brandon, it's a true friendship, it means that you got to tell him when they mess up. You know, Michael's got an issue with honesty, so maybe that's why he wasn't honest with Brandon and tell him, you know, you did a stupid thing. I have a feeling the girls probably told Taylor privately, you know, God, why'd you go over there? But Michael's not going to do that with Brandon. So I can see why the other castmates kind of got on him, because if you're going to simultaneously defend Brandon and agree with them at the same time, they're going to have questions, you know? But I do think that they were ganging up on Michael. You know, it's not Michael's job to be taking the heat for Brandon. So I get why Michael got up and left. No matter what he said in that situation, he was going to piss people off, whether it be the people on the stage with him or Brandon when he gets back home or the viewers. You know, let Brandon's actions speak for him. And if Brandon has something to say, he can release a statement or show up or record with the horrible, terrible, mean crew. So I understand why Michael got up and left, and I really enjoyed that Kevin Frazier went after him and closed the door. They didn't record that kind of a thing. I'm not even going to get into the racial aspect of it, because who the hell am I to say anything about that? But I don't think that's the reason why people were coming down on Brandon, because he was a black man. Maybe I interpret that differently. Again, I have no room to speak on this. I think Brandon's just a jerk because he's a jerk, you know? All right, fast forward to the crazy ladies and their tattoos. They're so wild. 10, really? 10 for season 10? I don't mind tattoos, but this one just seemed kind of random. But, you know, whatever. Let's get to the juicy stuff. Mindy and her backstabber friend. First, Mindy's friend Shani comes out. And really, she's all of our friend. So our friend Shani comes out and she sets the record straight, because Mindy isn't speaking to Lindsay anymore. Shani was privy to some information, and turns out Zach and Lindsay were texting and talking every single day. Zach had made plans to go visit this chick, and he told Lindsay that the two of them would have made a better match than he and Mindy. Yikes. So Lindsay and Zach's karma was right there in front of us, and it was spectacular. You know, we don't always get to bask in the glory when karma just takes a dump on people. So I was soaking up every minute of it. Zach had to answer to every question they were throwing at him, and he didn't know how to respond. He was caught in every single lie, and every time he opened his mouth, Mindy just looked better and better. On the contrary, let's move on to Katie. Kevin calls her ass out for cheating on Derek with her ex, and everyone's eyes start darting around because someone on the cast, maybe more than one, told Derek about this, but he promised not to say who it was. Well, we know it's not Mika because she said it wasn't her, which really points the fingers at the other three women. And I'm sure at least two of them, I would say probably Taylor and Mindy, told Katie. For some reason, I just feel like they left Jessica out of the loop. They just wanted her to enjoy her honeymoon crockpot fantasy and be happy. And then those three just deal with the drama that they have. But let's shoot over to Katie. How is she going to respond? Little miss love me because I'm so perfect. How are you going to take that? Well, she couldn't really take it because she just got her ass handed to her, and rightfully so. She had nothing to say because Derek had receipts, as the youth would say, and Katie was not expecting that. She wanted to have her cake and eat it too. She wanted to come out of this looking like Derek was this lost young puppy who doesn't know what love is. Go back to Katie being a therapist for a moment. What would therapist Katie say to a client who is always deflecting or can't take blame for situations that they caused? I think the therapist needs a therapist. So yeah, I'm thrilled Derek stood up for himself, but then we find out he's about to be dealt another blow because there were two castmates from separate marriages who flirted with the idea of being more than just friends. These two people are... I did not see this one coming. I really had no idea. I thought maybe Taylor and Derek, but I did not think it would be Katie and Zach. But I kind of love it. I mean, can you imagine that conversation they had over drinks? Probably just staring at their own reflections. But let's break down what Katie says here. She said it was before anything aired, so she didn't know how Zach had treated Mindy, that he treated her so badly. As if that would make any of this better. No. You're friends with Mindy first. Going for drinks with Zach should be a no, no matter how he had treated her during the show, during their marriage. Using Katie's logic, had Zach treated Mindy amazingly, it would have been okay if she continued to date him or grab drinks? No. It's crazy that either of them would think getting drinks together would be okay. Imagine Katie's reaction had Derek and Mindy went to dinner together. Holy shit, she would have lost her goddamn mind. Ugh, but I love Derek. I mean, out of all these people, I really hope he finds some kick-ass chick who wants to write Christmas songs and ski on clouds. I don't know, just some girl that appreciates him. I mean, he just lit up when Austin got down on his knee for Jessica. He's so sincere and adorable, and he wants to find romantical love. It's really sweet. Oh, and Mindy. Let's not forget Mindy. We got to find a good man for Mindy. Maybe put some feelers out there in the DC area. Well, thank you guys so much for joining me again today. Please go to iTunes, leave a 5-star review, or just click those 5 stars. It really helps me out. And do that for your other favorite podcasts, especially if they're independent podcasters. Just that little 10 seconds, 30 seconds at most, really helps all of us out. Check the show notes for Patreon and for Total Request Podcast. And until next week, take care of yourself, be safe, stay home, and stay salty.